Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's the intro. Just me blowing my nose.
Yeah. Under the trench coat.
Under the trench coat.
With Rolling in the Kink.
With Rolling in the Kink.
Okay, I'm ready.
Ridiculous.
Hello and welcome to Under the Trenchcoat, the after show bonus episode for Riven, the Shattered Continent. I am Ken Brown, your Dungeon Master.
I'm Brad, still holding back tears.
I'm Nick, and I need to think more before I write lyrics to songs. You know, I'll
able to do quick edits on them in case I cluster bomb your feelings.
I forgot that I put him in there. And if I would have tried, I don't know who I would have put in there instead, because it would have fucked with the syncopation. I will jump right in, though, and say that as I was writing this, even I was like, maybe I shouldn't include Phil, because there was part of me that was contemplating, inevitably, when we spoke with Phil, telling him to go home. And in episode, as you were like making Phil like awkwardly tiptoe around what he wanted to say, I was urging myself to talk, to either interrupt you or hopefully at the same time as you, and have one of those moments where Phil's like, I think I should leave. And I wanted Harkless to say, Phil, I think you should go home. But I sat on it because I was like, no, I don't know what Ken's going to say. Like, I'm thinking this is one of those moments where I get it, but I don't want to hurt Phil's feelings if he's like, I'm ready to do more. Like, I want you guys to give me more, because that was scary. But because I didn't fully know where that was going to go, and I didn't want to poo poo all over if Phil was going to have some like I'm becoming bigger than myself moment. I didn't want to be like, we're benching you.
That's but nice, Phil, but fuck you.
Hindsight, I wish I would have just fucking gone with my gut and we could have had that, because I feel like it would have been serendipitously beautiful. But whatever. The song hurt my heart, though.
There were quite a few things that were decided by the dice tonight.
Oh, fuck your dice. Fuck your dice hard.
Man, Phil was one of them, because we had already gone into great detail about Phil's feelings on all of this, and his starting to like his detachment from the events, like,
yeah.
And so this was kind of my, like, I was like, you know, I can see it go either way, because he does care, especially about you two. But like we've talked about is that what adventurer has like a happy family at home and goes off to slay dragons?
Phil does.
Phil did. more precisely, but I let the dice decide that one, because I felt that was the best way that I could. I didn't want to just make that decision, because I could easily justify either side of that coin. And so when it landed on that, I was like, you know what, that is the one that makes sense. It. The entire reason why he started with this was for them. And for him, the reason that it ends is for them too.
Mm-hmm.
And I not only was that, I think, the most narratively trying to think of a fancy word for it, but it was the thing that made the most sense. But it also felt for a loving father to go out and fight monstrosities that are beyond him. You know, that's a lot.
Well, and from Harkness's perspective, the reason I was entertaining the thought was this is the second time and a much more real time that Phil has almost died. So for Harkos, it definitely boiled down to, like, not that we don't appreciate you, but exactly what I said in episode. Well, I tried to say it a lot nicer than this in episode, but Trevor and I, we got nothing. We have each other and that's it. Like, obviously, well, we each have more in
not
ways.
Anymore.
We, okay. No offense to Brad and his decisions. No offense to Ken and his NPCs. Lenara means fuck all. Lenara is just going to be someone that we look. If you do a character death, that's on you. And Lenara is now just someone that you've created to cry over your dead character sheet. And I'm not saying because we're playable characters. I'm just saying because of everything that's happened, Trevor and Harkos are going to have to see everything through, whether it's us dead.
Right. Or
however the fuck the other end of this plays out, because apparently Syraxis can't be killed anymore because Malus asked us not to. Anyway,
well, that's all on you.
However this plays out, whatever the end is for these characters, whether they die before the end of the campaign or it's the end of the campaign, Trevor and Harkos have Trevor and Harkos. They have their little NPC connections too, but at the end of the day, Harkos is going to do, as we saw when he lied by omission to Phil, Harkos is going to do whatever he can for Trevor to a fault, despite everything. Like, there are so many things that you would think would sway Harkos, and they have in the moment, but at the end of the day, Harkos will lay down his life for his brother in arms. And I don't want to speak for Brad, but I feel like it's mirrored.
Oh yeah, it is. Literally the only reason I took Ray's dead.
And Phil does have people. I mean, fuck, Lenara has people. Lenara has the crew. Avalon, I don't really know. I don't know how the Heralds feel. I mean, she has mom and dad just as much as Harkness has mom and dad. But Evelyn has the crew. There was part of me when Brad was asking Lenara to dinner that I wanted to backpedal a little bit and say that Harkos talked to Evelyn just so it wasn't like it didn't, because there's part of me that feels like it's a little bit of a cold cut between the two of them, but it's not like there was a ton. It was a piratey drinking fling. Like, there was never anything too terribly serious, not from Harkos's perspective anyway. And he associates it as the pirate experience. Like, it's all lumped into one evening. And it ended on a sour note, a very large draconic sour note.
I mean, the short time that you've known Evelyn is that she's not tied to anything.
She's not going to be one that's going to hold. She might bust Harkus's balls over to a time or two, but it's not like she's going to have hurt feelings.
Yeah.
So, Harkos, I think, understands that Harkos has Trevor has Harkos, and that's all we really need. And so we're going to keep doing this because the other one's always going to keep doing it. Whereas Phil has people that he needs to go to. So even if you would have rolled the other way, I 100% not bullshit, I would have tried to assuade Phil not to come with us. Which would have been harder to do because Phil, I think, would have taken it hard. Like he said, he's like, there's part of me that wishes like you would ask me, but I'm so relieved that you're not. And there was part of me that, like, it would be very hard to be like, obviously we want you here, but you can't come. Like, you're not going. Which would totally shoot my argument in the ass of like, well, we let people choose, except for you. You don't get a choice.
Except for you.
We are telling you what to do and you're staying.
So not to push past this.
No,
but,
we need to. There's plenty more.
There's a lot more that you could talk about there, but you know, we have a lot of episode because this was dense. William.
Fuck you.
That one hurt.
More precisely, fuck your dice.
But
yeah, that hurt a fucking lot. And then you made me talk to Tyrillian.
I had a brief moment, which I know you probably did on purpose, where, so I went through a roller coaster of emotions in about 5 seconds. So you said there was a survivor, and again, I did not remember the whole William and Tyrillian being up in the air thing at all. My brain is fried, didn't remember that at all. So you said there was a survivor, and I was like, well, I'm gonna go fucking help somebody. And then we were moving the rubble, and you were like, and you see this cape, and I was like, oh fuck, it's fucking William. And then you were like, and it has the crest of like gibbous on it. And then I was like, well, who the fuck would that be then? Not thinking about the fact that the guard would wear the crest of the king. So for about 0.2 seconds, I was like, well, I don't know who the fuck that is. And I was like, no, it's William. And then I was like, cool, we're gonna get William. And then you're like, it's a body. And I was like, no, you said survivors. And then you said the kids, and it hurt, but it hurt more that it made sense, and I didn't want to fight it. Like, there was no part of me that wanted to be upset about what you did in a strong enough way that I wanted to yell at you for it like Brad did. because the interactions that Harkless and William have had, it made sense. So Harkless was sad. Did. Yeah, and I know you get that. I know you're just being a Brad about it, but it hurt Harkless, but he knows... Harkos knows in his heart that in William's final moments, he wasn't afraid.
Yeah.
That William might have been sad that he wasn't going to be able to do more. But ultimately, he did what he was always going to do. And he gave everything to the city that he felt like he owed everything to. The biggest part of me that feels kind of bad is... I almost feel like we just kind of brushed past it. And in episode, I was very emotional, so I didn't really want to say anything. There was part of me that wanted to like say some words as he took the body away, but I was like, nah, now's not the time. And then we went to Brad, which I was cool with, because I was, like you said, you were getting choked up. I was, my eyes welled up completely.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And so I couldn't really brain my way to say anything. So depending on how the king stuff goes, I might try and say something for William. But if not, I mean, I'll just have Harkless will always have in his thoughts William and his sacrifice for sure. But I guess that's the plus side under the trench coat is we can express that we know that in episode we might only focus on it for a couple minutes, but it did mean a lot, that whole exchange for sure.
Not to twist this dagger either, but I'm currently not right at this very moment, but I am currently writing a Riven Tale.
I almost asked you after last episode to write one for him because of his potential to kick the bucket, but yeah. I was like, I don't know that me making that kind of request was okay. Also, I was like, I don't want to jinx his chances.
As soon as the when I rolled, as I rolled all this stuff today, as soon as I rolled it, I was like, yep, that I need to get something written. So it'll be William and his last acts upon the world.
Good. Man fucking deserves it.
But on the opposite side of that coin was Tyrillian, who went through some stuff. That one I had a harder time with because I was like, it feels like his arc would be better served to die. I it there was so big of a part of my soul that was like, I want to flip those roles.
I disagree.
I know. Like, I'm right there with you. But I was like, that William was, to me, a much more interesting character to be able to see what happens going forward. But on the but it's not like Tyrion won't be. And you know, I've tried to play into how much his character's changed from the first interactions that you had with him to this point, and seeing where that growth will go, I think is, maybe it's not as emotionally charged as Williams would have been, but it's still going to be impactful in its own way.
Well, this is one of those where I definitely think this is why D&D is crazy, and it being at its core a game of chance is fucking crazier even still, because I agree with what the dice did. I feel like the dice knew exactly what the fuck they were doing, because William, I'm sure whatever could have happened going forward would have been great, but William was already great. Not that he couldn't be more, but William, there was never a point where either of us really disliked William, and not that we super disliked Tyrion, but we had doubts and all that stuff, and I'll get to that in a second. But William was always decent. He was always trying to help. Maybe he didn't believe the dragon stuff, but who the fuck does? Like, you can't fault him for that one thing that sounds like fucking crazy talk if no one's heard of it. So William progressing, obviously it wouldn't hurt. It would be awesome to have this fucking shield of Aetherport still prancing around doing some crazy shit. But for him to fall in that way is it feels like how his story should go. I mean, that's the hero's story. You spend your life doing this thing, the big bad thing that you always prepare yourself for, but you're like, it's never going to happen. Life's too good. Everything's too perfect. I'm just going to be a guard. I'm going to retire old. I'm going to live with my family. Everything's going to be great. That thing happened, and William gave everything to do what he always said he would do. On the other side of that, the dice decided that Tyrion, not that he was a douchebag to begin with, he's just a merchant prince, he's rich, and we were drunken. Well, I was drunk, and we were disorderly towards him, you know? So, like, I'm still in the camp that I don't think the guy's necessarily an asshole. I think Ken did a really good job of reacting to how big of an asshole Brad and I were. At the end of the day, I mean, that's what he did. Like, the guy didn't want us there because we were no one, and then we started spreading a bunch of bullshit that wasn't bullshit, but he didn't know. And so now he gets his redemption arc. Not that he's necessarily going from bad guy to good guy, but he feels apologetic, and he's fixing his fuck up. And he's going to, I don't know what all he's going to be able to do, but I feel like he's going to go from merchant prince, and whether it's through wealth or a change of lifestyle, he's going to become something bigger than himself to aid in these efforts that are coming down the pipeline. And again, not that William couldn't do that, but it's going to be so much bigger for Tyrion to do that than it would be to watch William do that. So it does hurt that William's gone, but I mean the dice know what the fuck they're doing, man. They really do.
And I mean, if you look at it from the perspective of, like, looking at the whole of Riven from the skies, you know, like, it, mm-hmm. it the impact that somebody like Tyrion can have on the world as a whole is much bigger than the captain of the Royal Guard would be able to have.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, he has some amount of influence in all this because of his position, but that's nothing compared to, you know, someone who was the head of a very wealthy, powerful family. And so you're correct, absolutely, that, you know, that there is a lot that Tyrion can do, and from what you're seeing of him, he is going to continue to do. Moving on. Again, we're flying through stuff, but again, it was a very dense episode, so I want to make sure that we talk mm-hmm. about everything that we want to talk about. Fucking dinner. I think that one of my favorite moments that I've crafted out of just my ass was Lenara pulling up her hand with a fucking ring on it. That you made that, you know, I look at Lenara like, yeah, it's nothing, blah, blah, blah. And then she holds up this fucking jeweled ring on her on her ring finger, is like, yeah, except for when you gave me this. Like, that was one of the that I pulled that so far from inside my colon.
I like how mad Brad got. It's like, really, my fancy clothes are the one thing you remember from when you were black fucking drunk. Just goes to show how vastly uncharacteristic that was for Trevor. That Hark was a drunken super, like, he just woke up the next morning, doesn't remember the fucking Rhyme being Master Elijah, doesn't remember that he's a dragon, doesn't remember he met Syrat, none of this stuff. He just sits up and he's like, were you wearing a suit last night? Did we go see the king and you were in fancy clothes with no armor, no weapons? Really? Is that a thing that happened? Am I crazy? Am I in a bed? What is a bed? Why? What's going on?
That whole little segment there turned very bonkers very fast.
Yeah, it did.
I don't think we'd be talking about dinner if Brad wasn't part of this show. Because, I mean, it wasn't boring, but, like, there wasn't anything crazy until Brad non-proposal proposes.
Do you like that?
No. Did you not notice that your best fucking friend was flabbergasted?
It wasn't a proposal. I just asked her to go out with me.
The last time you showed this level of emotion, I pulled you back to the mortal fucking plane. I think I had a I don't think I knew this consciously in the episode, but I think part of Harkus's reaction was a bit of a tinge of jealousy. Like, like, not that I want to be in a not that Harkus wants to be in a relationship with Trevor, but just like, wow, someone is encroaching on meaning more to Trevor than I do.
Well, you say that, but your old boo is in town.
Oh, I am very aware that you brought that up.
Mm-hmm.
I am very aware that was brought up in the synopsis of the month.
Yeah, just saying, you know, all the powerful people are gonna be there tomorrow. Maybe you'll catch a glimpse.
I hope she's there. I just hope she's not there for that reason. I don't think she would be. I hope she's just there to kind of see what the fuck's going down.
Well, and you know, there's a lot of representatives from a lot of places that are in Aetherport right now, and so you're going to get a smattering of all kinds of different, like, you know, governors and other, like, high ranking officials that are all from different areas. You know, because it's the capital. With, you know, whether there's, like, really, like, big open lines of communication to them or not, that's still the capital, and everywhere is to a certain extent beholden to Aetherport. Mm-hmm. And so they're, if the cry goes out for help, then they kind of have to answer. So it's not what you know of Melia. That's probably not what her aim would be to get here, but you know, power does weird things to people, or the prospect of power does weird things to people. I guess you'll find out, you know, in the next recording session.
All right, to inch away from this uncomfortable conversation, Brad, I want to throw a kudos out to you, because many, many sessions ago, couldn't tell you which one, you were the one who said that Okaido and the Shining City were one and the same.
Yeah. I think it was was it in an episode or an Under the Trench Coat, I think it was
Under the Trench Coat. I know it was in a recording.
Okay. I couldn't remember, because I remember it being talked about at game night one night. And yeah.
I just had a
really hard time, because we were talking about it and I was like, oh God.
I remember I made some comment, and then Brad goes, what if they're the same thing? And I was like, you shut the fuck up. Because in that moment, I was like, I don't want this to be like exactly what I said. I both wanted it and don't want it, you know? And so I did not expect that information to come to light in that moment. But as it started unfolding, I did. I was thinking to myself, I was like, don't say it. Don't say it. There's so much already that I'm dealing with emotionally. Do not fucking dump this too. And then you went and fucking did it anyway. So, yeah. However, already know the title to one of our future episodes. So that's fine.
That was one of those cards that I had up my sleeve for such a long time that it felt very satisfying to finally be able to play it. So I'm sorry, but you know,
it makes sense. I just, there's part of me that didn't want it to make sense, you know.
And it makes sense on such a deep level to Harkos, is that you were home this whole time but had no idea that this place that you lived, that you grew up, was so tied to your past, and you just had no idea.
And it also makes sense why, despite everything, like, unbeknownst to me, like, I was just doing it for backstory. I'm giving myself goosebumps while I think about this stuff. Unbeknownst to me, I was doing it for backstory purposes, but if we harken back to Harkus's Riven tale, Harkus made the comment of, like, I have wings, why don't I just leave? So, it wasn't intentional, but now it could be that, like, something in his core told him that he needed to be there, that he was supposed to be there. And
right.
He brought up, like, to Master Elijah, he's like when Master Elijah was like, you don't even appreciate this place. And Harkos was like, this place is truly beautiful. Like, he did appreciate, despite everything, he did love where he was. He just hated the way he was treated. And it's just, it's one of those things that, like, I hate Ken for making it so poetically beautiful. But God fucking damn it if it's not poetically beautiful. And it's one of those other things that, like, our audience members don't know us well enough that, like, it could 100% be scripted. Like, sometimes this stuff is so synergistic the way it works out,
right,
that, like, it seems unreal. And the best we can do is just, like, guarantee you, like, obviously we had no fucking idea, and it's just beautiful. Nope. If anything, it's because we've all played together for so long that we do it by accident. Like, obviously Ken did it on purpose, but Brad and I, on a subconscious level, pick up on shit, and so we implement things into our character that build into Ken's subconscious level that he already knows is going to happen. And that's probably us picking up on hints that we don't know we're picking up on at the end of the day. We're probably too stupid to see them on the surface, but somewhere in our character building, we're picking up on things, and it's building into stuff, and Ken just doesn't tell us because it's beautiful.
I love these moments, and these kind of things that, like, getting to see these strings, you know, because if you go back and you think about our first episodes, how disjointed some of that stuff seemed at first, and then you watch as so many of these threads start coming back onto themselves. I mean, it's that is probably I go back and forth so much as like when I get towards the end of a campaign, I'm like, God damn, I'm fucking exhausted. I'm mentally and emotionally and physically drained from trying to put so much of my soul into what I do with these. And, you know, maybe that's a little bit pretentious to say, but I want part of me to be in everything that I run. And if I leave a little bit of me behind with each one of those things, then, you know, maybe I'm hoping that that is good. And I go back and forth because it's so exhausting at everything. And then, you know, that something sparks that I'm like, God, I get these ideas, and then I start raveling things, and then like, oh, and then I take a thread and I pull on it, and I try to figure out where all this stuff is again, and I'm like, God, I can't wait to fucking run something again. And, you know, like running the little like Quinta shot that we did for in between Brad's game and Tomb of Annihilation.
Yeah, that was fun.
Getting to step back into our little shared world and explore it in a different way was exhilarating.
Oh, that night during Brad's campaign where he made me pseudo DM again, like he's like, oh, you guys are back playing next game. And I did the little, it was just pure exposition. That's what sealed the deal for me on wanting to actually run a game for you guys. Like actually watching that shit unfold on your faces, I was just like, okay, I want to try this. I want to do this thing.
There's a beauty in it. It's stressful. It's difficult. It's draining. But God, does when you get those moments, it feels fucking good.
Which is why I give you both kudos, because I would love, in the back of my mind, I would love to do one on the podcast for the peoples, just so they could get a feel for how I do stuff too. I don't think I have the fucking cojones.
I don't either.
And maybe that'll change after I run my... shut the fuck up.
No, I'm not joking.
Maybe that'll change after I run mine, which is who knows how the fuck long down the road. Since we're going to 100% TOA, which is going to be fucking awesome. It's going to be sad, but it's going to be awesome. Maybe that'll change. Maybe I'll have a new, a renowned confidence, and we'll talk about that when we hit that point in life. And maybe I'll do something then. But I've had thoughts sometimes. I'm like, man, I wish I DM'd on the show. And then I think about it a little bit more. And I'm like, no, I don't. No, I fucking don't. Not right now. I don't know nearly enough that I would be, especially editing myself. I wouldn't air anything. I think
that would be the most difficult part is it, you know enough to run. You do. There's no doubt in my mind. I don't think that you even, you have to have some grasp on the rules, but if somebody wanted to DM and they just had a passing knowledge, fucking do it.
Because yeah, as long as you're not in a group of shitty people that are going to send you over a barrel and show you the 50 states, you're solid.
Yeah. If you're able to run a game with people that you know and trust to not try to fuck you, fucking do it. Because, you know, there's nothing that's stopping you. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But, you know, there is no way better in my mind to learn the ins and outs of this game than to run it for other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that's so much of the job is, you know, how do I make how do I make this crazy fucking thing that my friend wants to do work? And, mm-hmm. I have my failings that I, you know, maybe I don't remember something or I stumble on, you know, like I misremember something or, you know, but I don't think that makes me any lesser. It just makes me a person who is, you know, doing this as, you know, they already have. But I have two kids and a wife and a house and a job and dogs and all that. You know, this is something that I'm doing just on the side. And you have to, it's hard to remember that sometimes, because
yeah.
you want what you put out to be perfection, and people by nature are not perfect, so you know that's not going to happen. But anyway, that was a long rant. There's a lot of forks in that trail. Hopefully everybody made it back
to camp. That's why you got to make sure you find your people before you bite into that sandwich, because you do it with a bunch of strangers and you might run into that where your group's going to be like, oh, well, you could have done it this way. You don't need people to critique you in what you could have done. You need people to critique you in helping you do what you want to do. So yeah. Like in our group, I think any of us, if we wanted to, could run a game, and we're all going to enjoy it some modicum of an amount, and we're all going to make it fun for each other, because that's what we're there for. And if you're surrounded by the wrong people and that breaks it for you, that stinks. You just got to find, you have to find your core group. And if that changes over the years, that's fine, but you need to find your people that make you feel okay to make the mistakes.
Yeah, and like my first experience with D&D, it was terrible. Just absolutely atrociously terrible. And as I got older and tried to play with some of the same people, I had some really bad experiences. I remember one of the times I was going into a detailed character history. We were going around introducing our characters, and I went into this whole shtick about this character that I was playing was an artist, and that they used, like, they saw combat as its own form of blah blah blah, and the guy who was running the game looked at me and said, shut the fuck up, Ken, nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
And just completely shut me down. And that was actually one of the last times that I ever played with those people. It was years before I played again. I found another little small group that I played. We actually did a lot of Vampire the Masquerade. And then after that, it was a really long time before we all started playing. And I've had more fun playing with you guys, both in the podcast and in our personal game nights, than I ever had when I was younger playing this game. And that is entirely due to the company that I keep for these games. So thank you both for, not telling me to shut the fuck up and that nobody cares. I appreciate you listening to the crazy that spews out of my mouth sometimes when I'm running these games.
Well, and despite Brad and I's reactions, we appreciate the crazy that spews out of your mouth while you run these games.
So one last thing that I wanted to talk about before we get done is King Jubilee being dethroned.
Not thrilled. I mean, I agree with what Tyrillian said about how, like, we all knew what he was. Yeah, you're not wrong. But still, and nice words from Tyrillian or not, Harkos is going to feel moderately, not in a like very negative way, but he's always just going to be like, I should have said a different lie. Like, also fuck you for that, but that's beside the point.
I'll be this guy. As soon as you said that, I was like, oh man, that's going to get places. Like, it worked in the moment, and you saved people's lives with it, and it made 100% complete sense, and it would have to anybody you were saying it to. But I was like, oh man, he's gonna be mad at me when I bring that one back around. And you know, I feel shitty for it, but it makes sense though.
Like,
it was a bullet that they could fire, and they did. You know, it's as simple as that. And like Tyrillian said, and this is, you know, that was maybe also partially me saying it, was that this would have happened eventually. Either it would have been his own doing, or it would have been something that somebody else said, or just this whole thing in general, that, you know, a fucking dragon rose from underneath the king's keep.
Yeah.
It wasn't like it was somewhere else in town. It was underneath the King's Keep. It's hard to make people believe that he would have had no idea, or that somebody around him would have had no idea to be able to tell them. So, you know, it would have happened probably at some point. It's just that was the ammunition that they used to make it happen.
It makes sense. It just fucking blows.
It does. But, you know, we'll see how that all plays out next episode, or at least part of it next episode.
Yeah.
All right. Well, any other final thoughts, questions, or concerns before we close up the trench coat?
I got nothing.
All right. Well,
I don't think so.
One final question, and maybe if we want to cut this, then that's fine. There, Nick, it depends on what you want to do. But with Phil gone, are you going to try to fill that spot with somebody else?
I don't know yet. Me personally, I don't know yet. There's a weird part of me that thinks yes, we should, but then the question becomes with who.
Right.
And you have a lot of candidates.
Yeah.
That could easily step in and be extraordinarily helpful. So this is where my mind kind of went after the dice made their decision on all this, is that it makes sense that Phil got you this far, but he's just kind of a dude. You have a lot of very competent people around you that could step into that role and probably, like, it, at least in terms of the narrative, would be more ready to tackle the challenges that you have ahead. So, you know, take that for what it is. I was curious if you had thought about it, like, in passing at all in the time between when it happened and now. I was just curious, and I guess my curiosity is sated for now. But
we're gonna recruit my dad.
I'm Ken.
I'm gonna go ahead and throw in my veto on that.
Oh, another thing that we didn't talk about, I'm sorry, we missed, is that Lena and the drow came up from the underdark.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
I came up from the underdark and pledged to, you know, like, made an allegiance with the surface, at least with the people of Aetherport, and created their new clan, which is they called Undersoul. Kind of owing soul as in like sun. That they seem to be kind of in reverence to this thing that they've been shut off from for their whole lives. Kind of that's what they're calling back to with that. So that's another big happening that we completely skipped over and I kind of forgot about in the moment. But That's a pretty big event for, you know, drow to actually come to the surface and be like, hey, let's work together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's another one we need to talk to before we leave town.
But all right, that was the last thing. So I am, in fact, Ken.
I'm Brad, still.
And I'm Nick as well.
You were unequivocally Nick. Thank you all very much, and we will talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Love you.
Stop. Stop it recording.
Stop it.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.